My successes have more than covered my failures. And so I think a lot of people are emotionally attached to the outcome or the result. If you start a business and it fails, that means I'm a failure. That means I'm no good. Well, that means your idea sucked or was the wrong time or you couldn't market that idea. If I had to cure for cancer, but nobody knew about it, I might say my idea sucks, which no, it doesn't. It's going to change the world. I just can't get it out there. So I think that so many people wrap their identity around being a failure or success. They're so afraid to try. So a good mindset that I've learned is, again, don't be attached to the outcome. I think another mindset shift that I've gone through, besides everything we've talked about of, you know, everything that matters to me, my faith-based principle, is I think a lot of people get it wrong and they vision board and they put up cars and houses and then they build their dream business to buy that stuff and they live their lives around their business. Like their business is their North Star. It's everything they focus on and have to live a life around it. Mm-hmm. I think that's totally backwards. I think you should design your dream life. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? What if you could do anything in the world and money didn't matter, what would that dream life look like? And then go build a business to support it.
Welcome to the Social Ray Podcast, where we highlight inspiring entrepreneurs and social media influencers who've used social media successfully to build their business and follow their passions. Discover the mindsets, strategies, and advice that will help you take your business to the next level. Now, here's your host, Raymond On.
Guys, this episode I talked with Cole Hatter, who's a real estate investor, speaker, author, and he's also the organizer of this entrepreneur conference called Thrive, which is hosted every year. And he's had a lot of great people come, some of who you might know, like Gary Vaynerchuk, Ty Lopez, Lewis Howes, Jack Canfield, and he's gonna have Eric Thomas and a lot of other great speakers come for this next one that he's hosting, which is gonna be in September. So make sure to go check it out. It's attendthrive.com. And also you can learn more about Cole's story through this interview, why he started entrepreneurship and the kind of mindsets and principles that he followed to become a multimillionaire, to be successful. And not just successful, he really has a loving, thriving family. You know, Cole's not just about making money, but he's about living a thriving life, not just financially, but emotionally, personally, relationally, in every way. And so that's why I'm so excited to share this interview with you guys. And also because Thrive was actually the first entrepreneur conference that I've attended when I was first learning about entrepreneurship. And now I'm getting to interview the founder, which is pretty crazy. And I really want you guys to take away the mindsets that Cole had. He actually started Thrive not for the money. He doesn't need the money, but to make sure that entrepreneurs are making a lot of money, but not just that, they're using their money to make a positive difference in the world. So hope you guys really like this episode. Please leave a review if this episode has helped you in any way and share it with your friends. And also, if you guys are interested in my coaching on Instagram, I'm going to be starting that soon. So send me a message on Facebook as Raymond On, E-H-N, or DM me on Instagram as ray.ehn, ray.on, and I'll send you more information about that. And so, yeah, I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Cole and get a lot of good information. And also make sure that you apply everything that you learned from this interview to your life. And thanks, guys, for listening. I hope you guys enjoy this interview with Cole.
All right, hey, Cole, welcome to the interview.
Thanks,
and
bro.
I just want to give a quick background of who you are to my audience. And sure. You're an author, speaker, investor, entrepreneur, and you're really involved in real estate, but you also host an entrepreneur conference called Thrive, which has been running for like 3 years now.
Three and a half. We'll do Thrive number 4 this fall, but it's been 3.5 years.
3.5 years, yeah. And you've had some like really amazing speakers like Gary Vaynerchuk, Jack Canfield, Les Brown, and just a lot more other great people. And that's part of what I'm going to ask you today, like how you made those connections. But could you give us a background, like what you were doing before entrepreneurship and like where did you grow up and how did you get into entrepreneurship?
Yeah, so I was born and raised actually here in Orange County. Moved around a bit. I lived in Seattle, Washington for a while. I lived in Houston, Texas. Lived in San Diego, but ended up kind of back where I started. And I decided I want to be a firefighter. God put it on my heart to want to help people. And so about junior high, when I started picking, hey, what career would I want to get into someday? I decided I wanted to help people. So I looked at being a police officer. I looked at joining our military. I thought about being a doctor. Firefighting made the most sense to me. So immediately out of high school, that's what I did. I became a firefighter. Did that for 2 years, and I got in a car accident that at least temporarily ended that career. I've since completely recovered and could have gone back to firefighting, but in that recovery year, I ended up starting a business. And by the time I was healthy enough to return to work as a firefighter, I just said, screw it, I'm gonna stick on with this entrepreneur thing. And so even younger than that, I guess I was entrepreneurial in the sense that I had my own clothing line in high school and stuff like that, but nothing that ever actually made me money. The first time I actually made money, had employees and paid taxes was at 21 years old, right after that car accident. So, you know, that was a 21 year summarization right there in a minute. But yeah, but that was it. I thought I'd be a career firefighter, put my 30, 35 years in and maybe do some side hustles on the side. But life, through some life circumstances, became an entrepreneur.
So what was that first job that you built at 21, or that business?
The first thing was real estate investing, which is what I still do to this day, same company. So the first company I started is the longest company I've had. It's been 13 years exactly now.
13 years.
And yeah, still, I mean, we made two cash offers this week. When this interview ends, I'm going to go do another walk of a property. So still grinding. 13 years later, here we are. And I've probably started 30 businesses in this 13 years, and 25 of them have failed. And probably a half of those actually cost me money. But the four or five I've gotten right have made enough money to make it all worth it. Way more pay me back for my losses. And here we are.
Yeah, and I think like what you kind of said shows that example. Like a lot of people are afraid to try because they're going to fail. But like once they fail, they think, oh, this isn't for me, you know. But you failed again and again. And like out of 35, that's like 1/6, right? And the 1/6 of those were successful, but you still made it happen, so.
Yeah, and I think that's important. A lot of people are afraid of failure, and we've heard that so much. You know, biggest reason people don't succeed is fear of failure. I'm not gonna go down that road, but it's just, it's a numbers game. I have to make 20 offers in real estate to get a house, right? Usually we don't date the person we end up marrying. We have to date a few people as we are getting older to find the one we marry, right? So everything in life is a numbers game. So many people are afraid to start that very first business because if it fails, then that means that they're a failure or something like that. You can't be attached to the results. We got to understand that everything in life is a numbers game, a batting average. You are a god. You are literally going to be a Hall of Famer if you can hit 3 out of 10 at bats, right? If you're batting a 300, you're a hero. And so, you know, free throw percentages in basketball, you know, anything you look at, it's a numbers game. And almost always, you fail more than you succeed. And even those that fail 7 out of 10 times at bat and get on base, that's not even a home run, get on base, 3 out of 10 times are a hero. And so just keep that in mind in our businesses and in life. Everything's a numbers game.
And like, you know, you said when you first got into entrepreneurship, you said you were like at a dark time, like mentally, financially, spiritually. Can you describe that time? Like how old were you? And
that was 21. That was a result of that car accident. So I was in a, you know, a dark place because, you know, there were some that didn't survive those accidents. So I was dealing with the grief of losing people I care about. I was dealing with the frustration of being in a wheelchair temporarily and no longer being a firefighter. So in a 66-day period, I lost people I care about. I lost my career. I had to move back in with my mom and dad because I was incapable of caring for myself. I had no income, but literally after that accident, I couldn't even feed myself. I was so busted up, I had to be hand-fed and carried to the toilet, like everything, right? And so that was where entrepreneurship started for me, at least officially, right? Besides my little kid side hustles, like when they eat stands and stuff. And it was just out of necessity of survival. And again, that was still to this date the darkest season of my life. And I hope for my lifetime that that would be the darkest season. I don't ever want to go through anything worse than that. And so, you know, that was the mindset and that was the place I was in life when I became an entrepreneur.
And so kind of like, and how did you find real estate? Because, you know, there's so many options out there and like a lot of people are trying to figure out like, what was my path? What's my like calling? You know, like how did you find your path like for you?
So calling to be an entrepreneur, again, I feel like I always was. Specific to getting into a real estate business, it was simple. I saw that the wealthiest people in the world all had real estate in common. Even if they made their money in tech or a totally unrelated industry, they would then take their millions and roll it into real estate. And so when I would go and hang out with successful people, real estate was a common thing. One of the things that pushed me over the edge is my parents' next door neighbors were a husband-wife team. She was a real estate agent, he was an investor, and they were balling. They had a big, beautiful house and nice cars and this really cool lifestyle. Like, sure, they had the monetary possessions, but they had freedom. And they were, when everyone else was leaving for work, they were in and out of their home all day, every day. Like, I was like, are you guys unemployed? Where's your money come from? And I found out that they were a real estate team, like I said. And I said, you know what? While I'm recovering on my way back to being a firefighter, I can become a real estate agent and I can list some houses and, you know, I can do that from a wheelchair if need be. And I ended up not becoming a real, I actually got my real estate license and was on the path of becoming a realtor when I then realized, whoa, there's way more money in investing. So shifted my career, became an investor, and again, that was it. So real estate was never on my horizon. I never grew up saying, someday I'm going to be in real estate. I'm going to be a firefighter, and I just ended up in that career, and I really enjoy it. You know, it's certainly not my passion. I don't wake up in the morning like excited to go do real estate. More thrive is my passion. But I still enjoy it, and like you heard, I've already made. It's only Tuesday. We've already made 2 cash offers this week, and I'm gonna go see a third property as soon as this ends. And so, so still grinding it out. Again, not my passion. It's my vehicle, and I think that's important for your audience to really process that. Is you hear a lot of really successful people say, you absolutely must be passionate about your work if you want to succeed. Sort of. I'm passionate about the lifestyle, and I realize the work is the vehicle. Again, I don't hate real estate. I'm not like depressed going and driving to an open house or to a listing. But it's not why I think God put me on earth. But it gives me the time frame, the financial freedom to do why I believe God put me on earth. And so I encourage, you know, those of you out there that have a job you hate, get out of it. I'm not saying that you should stay miserable. But if you're not super passionate about your business, like it doesn't give you goosebumps and make your heart race, but it is giving you time freedom and financial freedom, fill your life with the things you are passionate about and do the mindset shift that, hey, this business is the fuel, it's the vehicle that allows for everything else in life. And so that's what I do.
Yeah, I remember at your conference, Thrive, you talk about money is just a vehicle, and it's just, it went back to the history of like bartering, how they bartered, and it was just like a form of value, you know? And
yeah, so, currency.
Yeah, and so like, I feel, so I guess what is the answer then? Because like, you know, some people are like, follow the money, and obviously real estate there's money, but, and other people are like, follow your passion, follow what you love, so like, where do you find a balance between that, or do you have any advice on that?
Yeah, so again, Thrive is a business. I spend way more energy on Thrive. Honestly, I probably spend 5 to 15 hours a week on real estate, depending on the week. I spend probably 30 to 40 hours a week on Thrive. And this is my passion. I love what Thrive does. I love meeting people like you because of Thrive. I love hearing your guys' story of, hey, when I first came to the first conference, I had no money and I used what I learned and now I'm balling, right? So so Thrive is rewarding for me. But real estate is easy now that I've done it for 13 years and I have teams in place and I have systems in place. And so, so I'll use an analogy of a McDonald's. Pretend I opened a McDonald's as my very first business 13 years ago. Now that McDonald's has employees, it has managers, and it runs itself. Why would I shut it down? Why would I say, hey, I'm not passionate about hamburgers anymore. I'm going to shut down my McDonald's. Like, I'm not going to walk away from an income stream that's almost self-sufficient. I just, I always say I'm not really a real estate investor anymore. I'm just a problem solver and decision maker. And so my team comes to me. What do you want to do about this? I make a decision, and they go and they implement. So I guess that's the context of having work-life balance, or at least work balance of doing what I'm passionate about and doing what, you know, is also an income stream. Is that if I was still grinding 40 hours a week on my real estate business, or 100 hours a week like I was when I started it, then I'd probably just kill it and work on Thrive. But it's steady income and it's passive. It's somewhat passive in the sense that I'm not super involved in the day-to-day grind.
Yeah, and you have the money to fund everything else, like Thrive and stuff.
So I've got multiple income streams, but a huge part of that is the real estate business that helps bring in the liquidity to pay for things like Thrive. You know, the conference is over $500,000 of cash that go to investors. My wife and I just write those various checks to production and hotel fees and air and travel and all that stuff. It's over $500,000. And so where does that money come from? You know, and then you get it back through ticket sales, et cetera, but you still have to front it. And so we don't use a loan. We don't have to put it on credit cards. We don't go to investors. And so, you know, real estate helps put that money in my pocket.
And I know you also donate a lot of your money to like charities, and you have an orphanage in Mexico and stuff. So kind of what is it like? Because I know like when you get really rich, some people either go just like ball out and just like rent yachts and stuff. And then there's another group of people who are like philanthropists, like Bill Gates and stuff and yourself. So kind of like what goes on in your mind to donate so much and like do that, you know?
Yeah, so what I've found is a common trend that a lot of entrepreneurs start off pursuing the money and the monetary possessions, and then many of them, as they get to a certain level of success, they have enough money and stuff that now they're just doing it for fun, like Bill Gates, who resigned from Microsoft over a decade ago and is continuing to spend the rest of his life grinding out day to day, like you said, making an impact, running the Bill and Melinda Gates Foundation. And, you know, I say that with my own mentor, Than Merrill. The guy just turned 40 in December and has enough money that he never needs to work again the rest of his life, yet he works every single day because now it's about impact and legacy. And so I think because I had a touch of death a couple of times, and I realized that you only get one life once and that I'm on borrowed time, literally. You know, a lot of people say, oh my gosh, someone ran a red light, I hit my brakes, I almost died. It's like, no. Like, I should be dead. Like, I had traumatic brain injury, I had spinal injuries. And so, because I was literally on my deathbed in a hospital, I think I realized, and I did the wrong thing. My first few years of real estate, I was freaking bawling. I was 22 years old. It was 2005, and you could make so much money so easily that I got caught up in buying the crap. I bought a wakeboard boat and a brand new Escalade on 24-inch rims and a 22-year-old and all that stupid stuff, and then realized pretty quickly, okay, if I were to die tomorrow, because I've almost died a few times, what would I have to show for it? A garage filled with crap. And so I made that realization maybe earlier than a lot of people do, but I do see as these successful people get to a certain position, and each dollar amount is different for each person, you know, they kind of shift their focus of, hey, I don't need to make money anymore, I've mastered that game, I want to make impact, I want to leave a legacy. No one's going to name a library or a street after me because I had a bunch of Lamborghinis. They're going to name a library or a street after me because I changed the world. And I think for most people, they get to that position, and those that don't are those wealthy, rich people who you see that are miserable, multiple divorces, is in and out of drug rehab or whatever it is. And I think that's where the saying money can't buy happiness comes from, because you look at that minority of people out there that are freaking super rich and miserable, and it's like they're miserable not because they're rich, because they're not doing anything that actually matters. There's no substance to buying things. And you know, we're in a nice house right now, and I've got cool cars down in the garage. But my possessions don't define me. I'm not owned by my wealth. I own my wealth. And I know that those are just byproducts of hard work. And so, you know, that's a mindset shift that I think I went through earlier in life, in my 20s, because of my near-death experiences. But I think that, you know, anybody out there can make that conscious shift of, hey, you don't have to arrive, too. I should point that out, too. You don't have to be Bill Gates and say, okay, now I've got so much money, I'm going to go make an impact. We can do it along the way. And that's the whole message of Thrive, is instead of waiting until you're rich and 60 years old to start your foundation or whatever it is you want to do, get back now while you're getting rich.
And then, like, for those who are listening who don't know, like, Cole started Thrive because to honor your two friends who passed away, and kind of do you want to give a quick summary of that real quick? Or
The accidents I've been referencing were two different accidents, 2 months apart, 66 days to be exact. One was a car accident where myself and my best friend were both ejected out of the car. We hit the pavement at about 80 miles an hour. And, you know, I survived that. He didn't. We both had to be airlifted to the hospital. And he made it 2 days in the hospital before he passed. I obviously was, you know, discharged once I was healthy enough to go home. 66 days later, my buddy and I just got out of a wheelchair and I was on crutches, and he and I fell into an abandoned mine shaft. And on my way into the mine shaft, I was able to grab up and hold onto a bush. He fell the entire way down and he didn't survive. So here I am again in a 66 day period, having fallen into a mine shaft and having been ejected out of a car, and in both those instances lost my two best friends. And so that's what rocked me. I went through a very ugly season for quite a while after that, you know, probably, you know, 3 or 4 months of just deep depression, not even leaving my house. And then I turned a corner of realizing that just feeling sorry for myself and being a victim was no way to honor them, and that I wish I could get them back, but obviously I could not. That's where the world and life works. So I said, you know what, I'm going to do with the moments I have left. Who knows how much time I have? Maybe I'll live to 100. Maybe I'll die in 6 months, right? Because I've almost died a few times, but I made that conscious decision that I'm going to make every moment count. And that's what I've been doing since.
And I just want to say, I just want to acknowledge you for having set up Thrive and everything, because you've impacted so many lives. Like, you probably don't even know how many more lives are impacted, you know?
Yeah, and that's a good point, right? So, you know, we get 1,000, 1,500 attendees, and I get to impact their lives, but then people like you going out there, being successful, and living the message of what Thrive is and sharing it, for sure. And, you know, I don't want there to be any recognition. We've been talking a lot about Bill Gates, so I remember an article I read about him saying that at his funeral, he doesn't want anyone talking about Microsoft. He said he doesn't even want to be remembered for Microsoft. He wants to be remembered as the guy that ended malaria. And, you know, I don't want Thrive to be about Sonia or I. That's why I don't call it the Cole Hatter event. You know, there are people out there, God bless them, that brand it after themselves. And that's a good personal branding play. I did not want to call it the Cole Hatter Summit or the Cole Hatter event. We called it Thrive because I want it to be a standalone movement that my wife and I are, you know, banging the drum on and really making a lot of noise. But that it's a lifestyle of being profitable and purposeful and generous. And so, you know, I appreciate that. And, you know, I guess we'll never know how far the ripple effect will go.
Exactly,
But, you know, it's important to us. And again, it's not about personal recognition. It's about just being the guy that's fighting the hardest to make it work.
Yeah, for sure. And I know we talked earlier about how you don't find your identity in, like, material things and stuff. So, like, where do you get that for you?
So I'm born and raised in a faith-based community. I part of my identity comes from my foundation of my faith. Obviously, part of my identity comes to being a husband to my beautiful wife and my two beautiful little girls. So a large part of my identity is being a daddy and being a faithful husband and leader of this family. Then my extended family, right, is a huge part of my identity. We have a really strong family dynamic. My parents have been together for 51 years, which is super rare. I'm extremely close with my family and my, what we call framily, my friends that are so close are like family. You know, one of the guys, Josh, you just saw there. So that's a huge part of my identity as well. And then obviously last is my identity as an entrepreneur, that I own various businesses in completely separate industries, have nothing to do with each other, that the ones that have made it are working, and again, the ones that have failed. Yeah. But part of my identity is an entrepreneur as well. And that's kind of the order that I focus on is, you know, faith, family, friends, and then business, because I can work my butt off to be a good dad, but if I can't put food on the table, it's hard to provide. So got to have the business aspect in there as well.
Yeah. And then did you put it in that order, faith, family, or family, friend, faith? What was it? Friends?
Yeah, so family, right? So so my faith, my family, yeah, and friends would go in that. And then, like, business. Impact and business.
Impact and business, yeah. So did you have that, like, those are your core values that you've decided at an early age, or did you over time?
I guess that's just been an evolution. I guess I subconsciously made that decision to make my life count, to focus on my family, you know, to focus on being a man of faith, to focus on my business and the impact I'm making. And then as a result of that evolution of going through my 20s and then transitioning to my 30s, looking back, it's like, hey, you know, these are my pillars or my core values. And so this is what I feel matters, and so let's start talking about it.
And I know in your speaking you talk a lot about your faith, and that's kind of impacted you a lot. Like, did it always have an impact on you growing up? Or
I mean, again, being born and raised in a family that went to church and talked about God and stuff, it was kind of like my assumed identity, right? Oh, I guess if this is what my family believes, I do. Then I went through a season in high school of being like, well, wait, I never really made that decision myself. I just kind of jumped on the bandwagon because that's what my family did. So then I went through kind of a searching period and kind of like, hey, I'd rather get drunk on a Saturday night with my football buddies. High school was all about popularity and fun. So, you know, football, I did well in football. I was a football star, going out with those guys on a Friday, Saturday night, stealing their parents' alcohol and getting, you know, intoxicated at 17, 18 years old, right? Idiot. But that's all I cared about. And then, you know, I don't want to say I walked away from the faith, but it was certainly not a priority. And then after dying a few times and just really coming that close to death and coming to terms with losing people is where I kind of was like, okay, what do I want to do about that? And that's when I, on my own, started searching and actually came back. You know, I'm not going to say that I went and, like, traveled to India and looked at, like, Buddhism and monks and went to Utah and studied Mormonism and went to, you know, Rome and studied Catholicism. But just of introspectively praying and searching, came back to where I began.
Well, what was it that clicked that was like, okay, I should go back or something?
Just, you know, what regrets I would have if I lived a life of just worldly values of, hey, again, I almost died. And if I would have died at 21, I would have cars and stuff, right? I wouldn't have had anything eternal or significant or impactful. And so, you know, the thought of living a life where I've been given a lot of opportunity and leaving opportunity on the table would have sucked. And so outside of making money, again, what I believe in and how I want to spread that message and live a life representative of my values is really important to me. This is our one at bat, back to the baseball analogy. You know, we don't get 9 innings in life. You get one swing, one up to bat. And, you know, some people are hoping for a walk. Some people are up there and they won't swing at all. They're like, please let me get on base by walking. Some people are going to bunt. I'm swinging for the fences, and I'm either going to hit a grand slam or I'm going to go down swinging. But I'm not going to say, hey, I had my one at bat and I bunted, or just got an intentional walk or something like that. No way.
I think, like, that mindset is very, I've talked to a lot of entrepreneurs and a lot of the successful ones, like, they have that, I'm going to go all in, or or die trying, you know, mm-hmm. basically. And so kind of like, what are some of the like mindsets and principles of success for you that you've learned on your journey? Like that people can take away.
Kind of what we started with, I'm not emotionally attached to the results. So a mindset that I've learned through failing more than I've succeeded. Like again, I've failed way more than I've succeeded. But mm-hmm. just to recap on what we talked about earlier, my successes have more than covered my failures. And so I think a lot of people are emotionally attached to the outcome or the result. If you start a business and it fails, that means I'm a failure. That means I'm no good. Well, that means your idea sucked or it was the wrong time or you couldn't market that idea. If I had to cure for cancer, but nobody knew about it, I might say my idea sucks, which no, it doesn't. It's going to change the world. I just can't get it out there. So I think that so many people wrap their identity around being a failure or success. They're so afraid to try. Mm-hmm. So a good mindset that I've learned is, again, don't be attached to the outcome. Mm-hmm. I think another mindset shift that I've gone through, besides everything we've talked about of, you know, everything that matters to me, my faith-based principle is, I think a lot of people get it wrong and they vision board and they put up cars and houses and then they build their dream business to buy that stuff and they live their lives around their business. Like their business is their North Star. It's everything they focus on and have to live a life around it. Mm-hmm. I think that's totally backwards. I think you should design your dream life. Mm-hmm. What does that look like? What if you could do anything in the world and money didn't matter? What would that dream life look like? And then go build a business to support it. And I see almost everyone get it backwards. Here's my dream business. Crap. Now I'm working 7 days a week and I'm making money that I can't even enjoy. And I'm an absentee husband, father, and I'm traveling and I'm living in hotel rooms and on airplanes. And wow, this was my dream business. Now my life sucks. Yeah. And so I think that's a huge mindset shift that people should really focus on is build a dream life. Yeah. And the world that we live in with the internet, e-commerce, laptop lifestyle, freaking real estate like I'm doing, I've bought more real estate 2,000 miles away from my house in the Midwest than even right here in my own backyard, right? Yeah. So with the world that we live in, with technology and software and the internet, you can literally almost provide any lifestyle you want from yourself with total autonomy. True. And so it's easier now than ever to say, hey, I am going to design my dream life and figure out a way to make enough money to provide for that.
Yeah. So like everyone can make that dream life, but the way the vehicles to it, there's so many different ones, right? Like,
right, yeah.
And like, I think a big struggle for me even now is like finding my own path, like which path is the right one for me, because like, you know, I can get into real estate, but I want to do what's like best with my strengths and my passions. Yeah. And so like, do you have any tips on, you know, figuring out like what you're good at and how you can follow that path?
There's a bunch of different personality tests out there. There's like the DISC test, D-I-S-C, where you can see kind of where your natural skill sets are and where your weaknesses are, and then go look for a partner to fill in those weaknesses, right? And in some type of industry that fits that. But I mean, if you want to be an entrepreneur and have no idea what you want to do, then you should literally spend some time going to different conferences, reading different books, and just really examining where wealthy and successful people are spending their time and making their money. Mm-hmm. And you know, there's nothing worse than guessing starting a business. And there's a gentleman I'm friends with, Philip McKernan, who's speaking at Thrive this year. And he says that, you know, a lot of people work really hard to climb to the top of the mountain. Mm-hmm. And one step at a time, they see the summit, they get up there, and they're so proud that they're literally on the top of the mountain until they look out and realize they climbed the wrong mountain.
Yeah.
And that's such a powerful metaphor he uses. And so for me, I wanted to make sure that at least before I started hiking, that I'm climbing the right mountain. And I really recommend everyone do that. So how do you see the various income opportunities that are out there? Mm-hmm. Again, go to live conferences, read books, watch the internet. I mean, with podcasts and YouTube channels and live Instagram feeds, there's so much access to business content. Mm. If somebody really dove deep for even just straight 30 days, they would have at least the top five businesses that they've seen that they put on the board and start executing.
Yeah, for sure. And like for you, you know, we're gonna wrap up with a couple last questions, but like for you, like what is the legacy you wanna leave behind? Like when you're at your grave, or I know that's a heavy question, but like, I mean, I think you're already doing it, but you know, what would you like to see maybe at like, your deathbed.
Yeah. So I'd want people to say about me that I was a badass husband, you know, that I was a faithful husband, right? And that I was a badass dad. I'd want people to say that I gave more than I took and that I left more behind than I took with me. I'd want to say that I inspire others to do the same for whatever that looks like for them. Again, I'm very strong in my faith, but I don't, you know, judge other people on their lifestyle preferences, right? I don't subscribe to hate. And so I would hope that people said that I was understanding, that I was loving, and that I was accepting. That's part of my legacy as well. And then ultimately that I didn't do that quietly, but that I shared that with things like this to inspire other people to do the same thing. You know, it's so easy to jump on the bandwagon. I saw a picture of an African-American, probably 2-year-old boy holding the hand of a Caucasian boy. Mm-hmm. And above it, it was a meme on the internet, and it said, "Hate is learned." Mm. And I thought that was so powerful. This was, again, when there was a lot of that 2016, a lot of that racism very prominently, and where Black Lives Matter was born and all that stuff. And it's like, that's so true. The different prejudices and the different hate that's going on in there is learned. Mm-hmm. And so I hope that I also encourage people to make your own mind up and don't say, hey, well, if this is what my parents believe, I guess I should too. It's like, really? And so anyway, I hope that that's something that people say on my deathbed or at my funeral, is that Cole was someone who loved unconditionally, that he, you know, he inspired other people to consider doing the same thing.
Yeah. And you're already doing that. So
thanks, man.
Yeah, keep up with it. And I think for me too, it was like, you know, creating the life of my dreams and creating the life that I want for myself. It wasn't like, I think it comes back to not being a victim, because instead of feeling like, you know, why is this happening to me, or why this, why that, just you go and create that change like you did with Thrive and
totally
real estate. So
yeah, it's like Gandhi, be the change you want to see in the world.
Yeah,
there you go.
And then the last final question I want to ask is, if you could go back in time to your younger self, or maybe to any other like aspiring entrepreneurs, what would be one piece of advice you would give?
I'm going to repeat what I said 10 minutes ago. Don't get caught into the idea that you have to be like on the cover of Forbes magazine, and that you dedicate your entire life to your business and live your real life as a secondary, right? Like all my resources dedicated to my business, and what's left is my personal life. I just would really recommend doing the opposite, because I've done this the wrong way. I'm not just preaching from this soapbox. I lived it, right? And so I would just really encourage people. And, you know, there's guys like Gary Vee out there who, God bless him, he spoke at Thrive. I consider him a friend, and I really respect him. And I understand where he's coming from, but a lot of people misinterpret his message, which is why I really think he's changed his narrative a lot these last few years of being like self-awareness. And, hey, if you're happy, you know, with 2 weeks vacation, making $40,000 a year playing Xbox every Friday night, then do that, right? Yeah. Because I think that with his level of hustle and ambition and grind, so that a lot of people out there were thrown disproportionally into, hey,
everyone needs
Gary Vee doesn't do drinks on Friday nights. I'm going to sit in my office and work.
Yeah.
And I think that there was a lot of harm coming from that. And so I think that that's why Gary kind of rebranded his narrative of, hey, this is my life.
Yeah.
This is how I want to live. I want to be grinding 7 days a week. If you want to make $40,000 a year and play Xbox all day and that's what makes you happy, do it. And so I would remind people of that there's a lot of really successful people out there, that the Elon Musks, the Gary Vees, the Robert Hershevics, and don't get stuck in this idea that your business is your identity and that you were just put on this earth to work. Mm-hmm. Remember that the business is the vehicle, and why you were put on this earth is to live.
Mm-hmm.
And really figure out what living looks like for you, and then have the business fund it. So even though I already said that 10 minutes ago or however long, I would just, that would be the piece of advice I would give to young aspiring entrepreneurs. Don't get stuck in the grind and forget to live a life that matters.
And to love your family, to love the people around you. Yeah. So
totally.
And how do you make all these connections with these like entrepreneurs, like these big names, like Robert Hershevics, was that your first one? And like, how do you connect with these people?
So a lot of it is through friendships. A lot of this, I would say 90% of the speakers at Thrive are just friends of mine who I just reach out to and say, hey, will you come and be a part of this?
Mm-hmm.
A lot of them know people. So like for Thrive One, I asked Lewis Howes, who's a very close friend of mine, to come and speak. And then he hangs out with Gary all the time. So I was like, hey, will you give me an intro to Gary?
Yeah.
And that's how I got Gary Vee. At least that's how I got his attention. Some of them were just reaching out cold. Like Robert Hershevics was just literally going to his website and saying, do you want to be a part of this?
Yeah.
How I get them to say yes is because of the mission. Okay. They get asked to do 1,000 business conferences every single year that are like, hey, here's the name and here's how we're special. But at the end of the day, it's not. It's a big sales pitch and a big, you know, hawking products from stage, and by putting their face on the website, there'll be more butts and chairs to sell to. When they realize that Thrive, there's absolutely nothing for sale, and that the mission is inspiring entrepreneurs to know how to make money and then how to make money matter through being generous and creating for-purpose businesses, they're like, wow, this is the 75th event I've been pitched on this week, and the first one that is mission-based and not a big sales pitch where people are going to use my likeness, my image, and my brand to fill their seats to sell those people stuff.
Yeah.
They're going to use my likeness, image, and brand to fill these seats to inspire these people to live lives that matter.
Yeah.
I'm in. So, long answer, but many of them are my friends, a lot of intros from my friends, and then probably two or three cold, just straight up on the website submitting a form and having their team reach out to us, audit our event and saying, holy crap, yeah, we're in. And then, you know, if we can toot our horn a little bit, now because of the brand of Thrive and how badass it is, we get over 600 speaker requests a year. Wow. Nonstop people saying, yeah, you should have me on stage. You should have me on stage. You should have me. So now it's shifted to where, you know, a lot of people are coming to me and these big influencers have heard of us. So I'll go and talk to, you know, someone. Like Eric Thomas, he's speaking at Thrive this year, you know, the hip hop preacher, one of the most famous freaking motivational. If you Google motivational speaker, Google fills in Eric Thomas's name as an auto suggestion. And so when we were just on the phone with him asking him to be at Thrive, he's like, I've heard of Thrive.
Yeah.
And so now that the brand is growing, it is getting easier.
Yeah, yeah.
So I would encourage the audience to just grind it out. Yeah. And then once you've built a brand, what's that movie? If you build it, they will Field of Dreams. Uh-huh. If you build it, they will come. We built Thrive. It's pretty special, and now people want to be a part of it.
And do you have any like future goals with it, or kind of?
The big goal of Thrive is not to have an annual conference. It is to create a movement where we literally disrupt consumerism. So many businesses are now creating for-purpose products or for-purpose organizations, and what that means very quickly is your business doesn't just make money, it gives back, kind of like Tom's Shoes when they started One for One. They sold a pair of shoes and gave a pair away, and that we have that in literally every industry there is across the board, that consumers now have a choice. Do I want to buy a shoe from Nike? No offense to Nike, I have some, where that product just makes that corporation money and shareholders happy. Or do I want to buy a pair of Toms where, you know, good product, it makes that company money, but also some child somewhere in a third world country is getting a pair of shoes.
Yeah.
And so, again, I want there to be a choice for consumers in literally every product, service, and industry in the world, and to completely disrupt consumerism. That's the vision of Thrive. Right now, we're facilitating that with an event.
Yeah.
But ultimately, I want it to be a more of an incubator and a movement for these entrepreneurs.
Awesome. And where can people like go to check that out and follow you too?
Yeah, so following me is just at Cole Hatter. So on Instagram, at Cole Hatter, Facebook and all that's at Cole Hatter, one word, no dots, no underscores. And then for Thrive, it's attendthrive.com. So anybody that thought this was interesting, wants to be around badass speakers and learn a really, really special business model. It's this September the 14th, 15th, and 16th in Las Vegas, Nevada at the Hard Rock Hotel and Casino. Not Hard Rock Cafe. Everyone's like, oh, it's at the Hard Rock Cafe. Hard Rock Hotel and Casino.
July, you said?
September.
Okay.
September 14th, 15th, 16th in Vegas. And again, the website is attendthrive.com.
Okay, awesome. Well, I just want to thank you, Cole, for coming on the interview and sharing everything. And
for sure, bro.
I hope everyone follows you as well on Instagram.
Yeah. I appreciate that. Thanks, bro.
Hey guys, I hope you enjoyed that interview with Cole. And you know, for me, this was really crazy, like I said, because you know, Thrive was the first entrepreneur conference, and now I'm interviewing the founder of Thrive. So it's just crazy how it comes in full circle like this. And you know, now you've got to hear a bit of Cole's story of why he started Thrive, you know, why he wants to honor his friends who passed away in near-death experiences. And you know, he really thought about, you know, what's the purpose of his life, what's the meaning of his life. He wanted to end his life at once, you know, but now he's overcome that. He's become a victor, not a victim of his past and circumstances. So hope you guys are able to do the same. You know, all it takes is one decision. All it takes is your choice and your commitment to rise above your past, to rise above the things that hold you down, and to make something of your life, because your life matters, and you know, the lives of those around you matter. So make sure that you don't waste your life, because we only have one life. And if you guys have enjoyed this interview, please leave a review on iTunes or wherever you found this. Share with your friends, family. And like I said, if you're interested in my coaching for Instagram, please send me a message on Facebook as Raymond on AHN or on Instagram as ray.ahn. And I'll be sharing with you guys how to grow your Instagram, how to make it presentable, and also how to network using social media like I've done with these high-level influencers and entrepreneurs. So yeah, thanks guys for listening. We'll see you on the next episode.